Recently, Walmart announced that they would be increasing the starting salaries. It would be offering new hires as well as increasing the minimum salaries of some of the current employees. This follows similar steps taken by quite a few other companies. They have something in common, which we're going to get into with my next guest. Above and beyond that, though, some proponents of what's called a working wage have cheered this, while others say, well, nice start, but still not enough. The White House among those. Here with her analysis of this issue is a health policy director and senior policy analyst with the Independent Women's Forum, also a contributor to the book Lean Together, Hadley Manning. Good morning, Hadley.
Morning. Thank you for having me.
And to learn more about the writings and the analysis of issues from the Independent Women's Forum, they are found at IWF.org. And, of course, we have a link up over at our website to get you to them. And, you know, superficially, Natalie, when you say that salaries are going up, that sounds like a great thing. But when you think that way, you're only looking at one side, because these are companies that are in a business. It's not a matter of what's doing fair or right, whatever the case may be. They're doing it because they can, as a for-profit business. Not every for-profit business is making that kind of profit, though.
Right. Well, there's a difference between what I would call artificial wage growth and real wage growth. Artificial wage growth is what happens when you have a price floor or a government mandate or regulation that says you have to pay workers a certain amount, or you have to provide workers with certain benefits when they're on the job. All these workplace regulations add to the cost of employment and actually price a lot of workers out of a job. So on the other hand, what we really want is real wage growth. That is, when companies and businesses compete for workers by offering better salaries of their own will. They do this voluntarily, and that's what we've seen Walmart do and several other big corporations. And those decisions, like you said, have been cheered by some and jeered by others. But they are, of course, you know, we do, as people on both sides of the minimum wage debate, everyone wants their fellow compatriots to have higher wages. We just want it to happen in a way that's economically sustainable,
as opposed to the mandated 10-10 that the minimum wage that the White House is mandating or a proponent of, and even the, well, let's put this into not just practice, but into fact. San Francisco, back in November, passed by overwhelming margin a measure that would increase the minimum wage within the city limits to $15 per hour by the year 2018. Found this business Borderlands. It's a bookstore, independent bookstore. Yes, there are still a few out there. And this was a release at Borderlands Book. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but just in part. San Francisco voters overwhelmingly passed a measure that will increase the minimum wage within the city of $15 per hour by 2018. Although all of us at Borderlands support the concept of a living wage in principle, and we believe that it's possible that the new law will be good for San Francisco, Borderlands Books, as it exists, is not a financially viable business if subject to that minimum wage. Consequently, we will be closing our doors no later than the end of this month, March 31st. That's the reality.
Right, and that's not the only small business in the San Francisco area to shutter its doors as a result of this minimum wage increase. I think you mentioned it earlier, but minimum wage, or the wages that any employer decides to pay his or her workers, is not the only variable that business people have to take into account. Of course, that is their labor cost. But what all for-profit businesses are seeking to do is maximize their profits, of course. And they also have to consider their revenues. They have to consider, you know, how many hours are they going to keep this store open? And all those variables work together, hopefully, for the businessman to make the maximum profit. So when you increase labor costs, you, of course, have to adjust one of those other variables, either by hiring fewer workers or keeping your store open for fewer hours, or coming up with a lower profit at the end of the day. And we don't want to force any businesses, especially not small businesses who operate on very thin margins, to make any of those choices.
I'm with Hadley Manning, who is a senior policy analyst, health policy director for the Independent Women's Forum, also contributing author for the book Lean Together, IWF.org and the web. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. Another aspect of the other side of the coin, of the extra coin of minimum wage, here in New Jersey, for example, taxes add an extra 10.5% to payroll expenses. Social Security employees have 6.2% of their wages withheld, but what they don't see is the matching that the employer kicks in. Medicare, both the employer and employee, pay 1.45% of the wage. So there's taxes for the employers, for the unemployment disability insurance, workers' compensation. So again, a small independent business, if you mandate that they pay $10.10 versus the current $8.25 in New Jersey, there's going to be a financial hard fact to swallow for some, but there will be less jobs that these businesses can afford to maintain.
That's right, and businesses will respond to those incentives that the government's providing by regulating how businesses hire and compensate their workers. For example, although this regulation doesn't apply to businesses with fewer than 50 workers yet, the Obamacare law requires that employers offer any worker who works more than 30 hours a week a health insurance benefit and that the employer contribute towards providing that health insurance benefit. That, too, raises the cost of employment. And although a lot of these benefits and mandated requirements on how workers are compensated, I believe, come from a place of good intentions, and a lot of voters and a lot of the public will support them because they feel that everyone should have these benefits, they don't recognize the downside or the cost that comes with providing these additional benefits. Another debate that's similar is the debate over mandated paid leave or mandated sick leave. And this is something that's discussed frequently with regard to women, with regard to maternity leave. Should businesses be required to offer some kind of paid maternity leave to all of their workers? Again, this impulse to provide these kind of benefits or to mandate that these kind of benefits are mandatory may come from a good place and may come from a desire to see all American families receiving these kind of benefits. But on the flip side of that coin, when employers are forced to provide certain benefits, they can't afford to employ as many workers and they can't afford to maximize their profits as we would like to see them do in a market economy.
And just to add some craziness to the insanity, a lot of people don't realize this, the illegal alien amnesty program that's currently being held up in the courts, but that the Obama White House wants to push through, actually has a $3,000 hiring incentive for businesses who hire any of the illegals who get the amnesty.
Well, unfortunately, there's already an incentive because of our minimum wage laws and because of other regulations on American workplaces. There's already incentives in place for American businesses to outsource much of their labor. And we've seen this happen over the past. You know, we look at why our economy is losing a lot of middle wage jobs or low wage jobs. In many cases, that's because large businesses look at their bottom line and they see that it's actually cheaper to employ people overseas where they don't face as many regulations and as many mandates on pay. And this, of course, harms American workers, especially those with lower skill sets who can't compete with the government-mandated minimum wage.
Wrapping our time with Hadley Manning, who is a contributing author for the book Lean Together, also a senior policy and analyst with the Independent Women's Forum, IWF.org, and the web. Here on Issues and Ideas, you mentioned regulations too, Hadley. Wouldn't a better idea be to remove as much red tape and regulations at all levels, state and federal, for businesses, because a business grows, it succeeds, creates and generates more revenue? Guess what they could do? They could hire more people.
That's right, and I think at the beginning of our conversation I mentioned real wage growth. Real wage growth is what happens when we do have a robust and growing economy, when businesses are seeking to maximize profits, and to do that, oftentimes to create more and more value, businesses will need to hire more and more workers. And of course, this benefits us as employees, as workers, because if business A is offering me a job, but business B across the street is also offering me a job, if there are essentially more job openings than there are workers, then this is mind-blowing to consider given how weak our labor markets have been over the past years. But if we could consider that businesses would actually have to compete to hire and attract and maintain workers in their workforces, then effectively we would be given much more leverage as individual workers, as employees, to say, you know, business A is offering me this wage, but I'm going to take a higher wage at business B. And that competition for labor, for workers, is what we want to see in our economy. Right now, instead, what we have, because we have a very low labor participation rate, and because our economy has been slow to add back the jobs that we lost in the recession of 2007-2008, is that instead the coin is flipped and many workers are having to compete to get the very rare job openings that come along. So we want to see the opposite taking place, where individual workers are empowered to have that leverage, to see that real wage growth, and that means that they can go out into the economy and have actually a higher quality of life, because what you have with artificial wage growth, you may raise the minimum wage, but this also raises so many other variables, including price inflation. Many of the things that consumers and all wage earners are also consumers have to deal with when they go out to consume in the economy.
And just one quick final point, too. A minimum wage is not a career wage, not at least not by design. You can do some initiative, improve and grow your skills, and advance in businesses really of every size, especially the big box stores. And you could always start as a low-end employee and work your way up to a management position. You will no longer be worried about that minimum wage. You will indeed have an earned living wage. And that's another
point. That's right. And many people who work in minimum wage jobs are doing so because they're very young, because they are at the entry level of the workforce, because they're part of a household where someone else in the household is actually making and contributing a higher wage than minimum wage. So, of course, it would be very difficult for any family to try to make ends meet with only one income that is at the minimum wage. But many minimum wage workers, when they start at that entry level, they see their pay raised within the first 6 months to a year of participating in that job. And we do want, of course, those price floors to be as low as possible or non-existent so that people can get their foot in the door, so that they can see wage increases because they are adding value as an employee. And we want to see people move on into jobs that require higher skills and more experience so that they are not any longer at that entry level.
Website for the Independent Women's Forum, IWF.org. She is their health policy director, senior policy analyst, contributing author for the book Lean Together, Hadley Manning. Hadley, thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you.